Okay, so we are holding on Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, 13 lines from the top, about halfway down the narrow lines. Line begins Rav Ashi. Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. Okay, we started talking about yesterday the question of saving Sifrei Kodesh from a fire on Shabbos. We said that if a fire breaks out on Shabbos, then as long as there's no issue of Pikuach Nefesh, then you obviously can't put out the fire. And the Chachamim also made certain rules about what you're allowed and not allowed to save, because they don't want you to panic and end up completely forgetting that it's Shabbos and putting out the fire. But we mentioned in the Mishnah that Kisvei HaKodesh, that books of Tanakh, are not only you're allowed to save them, but we said you're even allowed to, as we're going to learn in the next Mishnah on Amud Beis, you're allowed to slightly bend the rules of Shabbos in order to save them, such as to carry them to a place where normally you wouldn't be able to carry on Shabbos. Not a Rishus Rabbim, of course. But as we'll see in the next Mishnah and in the Gemara tomorrow, Best Hashem, a Mavri Mefulosh or a Mavri She'en Mefulosh, whatever. So, Iboyelahu. So now we have a question like this. Hagil Yonin Shel Sefer Torah, the blank spaces on a Sefer Torah, now, there could be a few different kinds of blank spaces. You could have, we discussed yesterday the case where Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, 13 lines from the top. You could have the case where you had, we discussed yesterday, where you had a Sefer Torah written and then the letters got erased, and now all you have is blank parchment over there. We said if you have 85 letters left, then you can still save the Sefer Torah, and we had a Machlokas Rav Huna and Rav Chista, whether those 85 have to all be in one place or whether they can be scattered around. So that could be one kind of Gilyon. And then you also have the blank areas that are written to begin with on a Sefer Torah. You're supposed to have between one column and the next of the Sefer Torah, you have a space. At the top, you have a space. At the bottom, you have a space. At the beginning and the end of the Sefer Torah. So right now, we're assuming that Gilyonim, when we're asking about Gilyonim, B'Pashtus, we're talking about all those different cases. So how Gilyonim shall Sefer Torah, Matzilin Oysin, Mepnei Adleika, Oyin Matzilin Oysin, Mepnei Adleika. Can you save those from fire on Shabbos to the same rules that we said in our Mishnah, that you save them on Shabbos, and what it says in the next Mishnah, that you can save them to a Mavu Yamafulosh, or a Mavu She'enim Afulosh, or whatever, does that apply also to these Gilyonim? So, Toshma, we'll bring a proof from what we learned yesterday. Sefer Torah Shabbala, we said if a Sefer Torah wears out and most of the letters have gotten erased, Im Yesh B'Lachet Shmonim B'Chomesh Osiyas, if you have left enough in it to be able to collect 85 intact letters, Kigoyin Parashas Vayhi Ben Tzayah Aron, which 85 letters is the equivalent of the size of the Parashah of Vayhi Ben Tzayah, which, as we said yesterday in the Gemara, is to a certain extent considered as if it was a Chomesh of its own. Matzilin, then we're allowed to save it. Bim lav ein matzilin. If not, we said you're not allowed to save it. Now, if you're going to say, Bahamai, if you're going to say that you can't save the Gilyonim, if you're going to say that you could save the Gilyonim, rather, then why would we need the 85 letters? Typically, Mishum Gilyon Diday, all you have is, you just have the entire Sefer Torah. It is parchment that was used to write a Sefer Torah. And now most of the letters are gone, but you still have the part. If you're going to say that you're allowed to save the Gilyonim, again, the Gilyonim include the area that used to be written on and now is blank. So then in that case, if you're going to say you can save the Gilyonim, then you would automatically be able to save those as well. So wouldn't that prove then that you can't save the Gilyonim? And the only reason in this case why you're allowed to save the Sefer Torah is because it has 85 letters left. The answer is the Gemara says not necessarily. Bola shiny. It's different when the Sefer Torah wore out. Once the letters wore out, then the Gilyon itself doesn't have the same level of Kedusha as well. The question is what about the margins on the top and the bottom and so on and so forth. That's what we have to ask about. So you have like this, when you write a Sefer Torah, there are halachas about it. You have to have, there has to be a certain amount of space between one column of the Sefer Torah and the next one. You have to have at least two etzbois between them. You have to have four etzbois, you have to have three etzbois and four etzbois, one on the top, one on the bottom. I think three on the top and four on the bottom, but I might have that backwards, whatever. You have at the beginning of the Sefer Torah, you have to have enough to be able to roll around the Eitz Chaim. At the end of it, you have to have, Rashi mentions further along on the Amud, that you have to have enough to be able to wrap around the whole Sefer, although really the Gemara and Baba Basra, where these dinim are, Torah says that that's really only when you, when you're writing Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim all in one gigantic roll. When you're writing just a Sefer Torah by itself, and it has two Atzichayim, then you just need at the end also long enough to be able to roll around the second Atzichayim. Whatever, the point is that you have blank spaces on the Sefer Torah. So, but the Gemara is saying, Bola Shiny, it's different. If the Sefer Torah itself is worn out, then if it doesn't have 85 letters left, then it doesn't really have its kedusha left. The question is when the Guryonim themselves are still intact, but the writing is gone. Good morning. And by the way, the Noda Behuda points out it's not that we're saying it has no kedusha at all. I mean, we learned yesterday, for example, that even if a Sefer Torah rots away or is eaten up by worms or whatever, where obviously it's not readable, you still have to put it in Geniza, you still have to put it in Shemus. What we're talking about is strictly as far as this din of being allowed to bend the halachas of Shabbos in order to save it. So Gemara says Toshma, Sefer Torah Shenimchak. Okay, we have another Braisa that says if a Sefer Torah is erased, so the previous Braisa was talking about Shabala, where the Sefer Torah wore out. Where there you could say, in other words, the parchment and the ink are worn out. Here, the second one, we're talking about Shenimchak, in other words, where the parchment is still completely intact, and just the lettering of the Sefer Torah got erased. So again, Im Yesh B'le Lachet Shmonim V'Chomashoyis, if there's 85 letters left of it, that could be collected together. Kugon Parashas Vayibin Sayah'on, which is the size of Parashas Vayibin Sayah, Matzilin, then you're allowed to save it on Shabbos, V'im Lav Ein Matzilin, and if not, then not. So the question is, am I? Now, again, you should ask why, if you're going to say that you're allowed to save the Gilyonim, typically, Mishum Gilyon Diday, then you anyway have the Gilyon itself, that you have the margins themselves of the Sefer Torah, are still intact, and here, or not even the margins, here we're talking about the actual area where the letters were written. Again, you have in the previous case, fine, it was Bola, it was worn out, so you could argue that maybe then the parchment itself doesn't really have any chashivos anymore either. But here we're talking about the parchment is still fairly fresh, just the letters got erased. So shouldn't that prove that you can't, that the Gilyonim themselves do not have the level of kedusha to save them, and only when they're written on, only when they have 85 letters? When they score lines, that's called sirtut. Yeah, the place where the letters are. So you have that. No, so Gilyon is the area that is written on. Gilyon is the area that's not written on. Yeah, the area in between. No, in fact, actually, I think the Rashba says on our Gemara over here, the Gemara is not asking about the space between, the Gemara is going to mention soon a case where the Gilyonim are cut off. Now, we're not talking about, for example, let's say, you cut off, let's say, the space between the lines, because obviously if you do that, you don't have anything resembling a Sefer Torah. Those kinds of things, you have to have those space. In other words, he distinguishes between, there's the spaces that you have to have, Poshet, in order to have a written Sefer Torah. We have, for example, every letter has to be, it's called Mukaf Gvil. Every letter has to be surrounded by blank parchment. Otherwise, the ksav is not valid. So that we're not referring to as gilyonim. That we're considering to be just part of the Sefer Torah, of the written part of the Sefer Torah itself. We're talking about the parts that are there more for the beauty of the Sefer Torah. That's the margins on top and on bottom and between the columns and so forth. So if you have a Sefer Torah that mostly got erased, then if you have a Sefer Torah that mostly got erased, then Then we're saying that only if it has 85 letters left can you save it. So obviously that shows the Gilyonim themselves, the blank margins around it and whatever, don't have, or for that matter, the area where the writing was doesn't have Kedusha anymore. Because if it had Kedusha, then just even if it has less than 85 letters, just for that you should be able to save it. The answer is Mokamak Savlokamabayali. The answer is the place where the writing was and got erased, obviously, I'm not asking about because it was used to begin with in order to write with, and once the writing is gone, then obviously it loses that high level of kedusha, and therefore there's no question about it. Because after all, why was it Kodesh in the first place? Because of the writing on it. So once the writing on it is gone, the Kedusha goes with it as well. So therefore, so there's no question, obviously, that the area that was written on and now constitutes a Gilyon, that you wouldn't be able to, that if unless you have 85 letters left, you can't save it on Shabbos. What we're asking about is the ones that you have the margin on top and on bottom, again, the three etzvos and four etzvos that you have on the top and the bottom. Also, the space between one parasha and the next, which again, you have now, you have the psuchos and stumas, but those are not needed in order for the letters themselves to be kosher. The letters themselves are kosher, the letters themselves would be kosher even if the parashias were written wrong. Just if the parashias were written wrong, you don't have a valid sefer Torah. But those spaces themselves are not needed for the kashrus of the letters. Those are more needed for the kashrus of it as a sefer Torah. So therefore, we can talk about those gilyonim. Let's say that you have those blank areas over there. You have also Shaben daf ladaf, the space between one column and the next. We need at least two etzvos between one column and a sefer Torah of the next. Shaben tchilas a sefer, at the beginning of the sefer, where you need a large enough blank area to wrap around the Eitz Chaim. And what's at the end of the Sefer, which again, Rashi says, if you're writing them all in one big volume, Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, then you only have it on one Eitz Chaim, and then what you do is the end, you need to have a space large enough to wrap around the entire thing, and if you're writing only a Sefer Torah, then you just need enough to wrap around the second Eitz Chaim, because the Sefer Torah is written with two Atzi, Sefer Torah has two Atzi Chaim. For all other Sfarim other than Sefer Torah, all you need is one Eitz Chaim. Only for a Sefer Torah, you need two. Nowadays, for example, you look at a Megillah Esther, really, you mean when you get down to it, other than Sefer Torah, Megillah Esther is the only one nowadays that we write on parchment anymore, and you can find old Megillah Esthers, you see sometimes in pictures from a few hundred years ago or whatever, where they used to write them and put them on one Eitz Chaim. Nowadays, it's much more common that we have Megillah Esthers that are just parchment by itself without an Eitz Chaim at all, but older ones, you can find older ones that have an Eitz Chaim, but only one. So the question is about those blank spaces, which were to begin with designed to be blank spaces. They were never to be written on in the first place. So the question would be those. So those were originally blank. Now they're also blank. On the other hand, the Sefer Torah wore out. So the question is, okay, Sigmar says, typically Mishumahu. Okay, so then in that case, obviously, we can still prove that you can't save the Gilyonim, because if you could, then what about in the case where the Sefer Torah was erased and you have less than 85 letters? Okay, but if you're saying that the Gilyonim themselves count, that would be reason enough to save this worn out Sefer Torah, because it still has the Gilyonim. The fact that you need 85 letters seems to show that the Gilyonim themselves are not important. The answer is okay. The Gemara says the guy is v'shadi. Fine, but the question could be, what if these margins were cut off? What if these margins were cut off? All you have left is the place of the ksav. Now we can talk about the question of the Sefer Torah itself, the area where the writing itself was. Are you allowed to save it? And the answer is only if it has 85 letters. And a different way that Rishonim understand the answer is that the clarification of the question is that if those margins themselves were cut off and are separate, placed separately from the Sefer, are you allowed to save them on Shabbos? So originally they were attached the Sefer Torah, but then somebody cut them off. So now are you allowed to save those pieces of parchment which once were part of a Sefer Torah and now aren't anymore? So according to Rashi, the question is the question is about the Sefer Torah itself. Now it doesn't have Gilyonim anymore, so now the only thing that can save it is if it has 85 letters, if we assume the Gilyonim themselves are something that has Kedusha of its own. Or, according to the other Mefarshim, we're saying that if the Gilyonim were cut off, then the question is whether you can save them. Okay. So still no proof yet. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring a proof from a Mishnah. We learned near the beginning of the Masechta, in the first Perek, we talked about the concept that there's a Gzeira Dirabbanan, that a Sefer Torah and other Sifrei Kodesh make a person's hands tomei. We just discussed over there the idea that they used to store food of Truma together with Sefer Torah, figuring that they're all Kaddish, and the mice would eat the food and they'd damage the Sefer Torah, so they made this Gzeira. So, what exactly is metame your hands and what is not? Toshma, hadur yonin shal maila v'shalmata, the blank spaces, the margins at the top and the bottom of the Sefer Torah, should be in parasha l'parasha, the blank space between one parasha and the next, we have a parasha psucha or stoma, should be in daf l'daf, between one column of the Sefer Torah and the other one, shebetchilas ha-sefer, shebetsof ha-sefer, and at the beginning of the Sefer Torah and the end of it, all of them metame nesedayim, all of them are metame your hands. So we see, in other words, that those do have kedusha of their own. Well, that's actually why the minute that plus the fact that you don't want to erase the letters is precisely why we touch the Sefer Torah with the talus or with the gautel of the Sefer Torah rather than with our bare hands. I mean, nowadays we're not particular about Tumah V'Tahara anyway, but it's more a matter of out of respect for the kedusha of the Sefer Torah. The Gemara actually has an expression in a couple of places that if a person we actually learned it actually also in the first paragraph in that sugya over there, kol oichas Sefer Torah orum nikbar orum, that if a person holds the Sefer Torah with his bare hands, then the severe consequences. So for that reason, we don't touch the Sefer Torah with our bare hands, but also because we don't want to erase the writing, but we don't want that the oil on our fingers should erase the writing. So we touch the Sefer Torah with the gautel or with the talus. But no, because it doesn't transfer. But in any case, because the gzera is that they're metame your hands and make them as if they were sheni. But it's only your hands; they're not metame all the things that they touch. So they're not metame the talus at all. Yeah. What? A sheni of the truma would have to go to them. So what it is for hands, what you'd have to do is you'd have to wash your hands. You have to wash your hands until it's a daim, and then that would be that. Okay. Fine. So the point is that we see that those blank spaces are matame as they're dying. So they obviously have the kedusha of the Sefer Torah. Therefore, you should be able to save them on Shabbos. The answer is Dilma Agav Sefer Torah shiny. Maybe it's different when they're still attached to the Sefer Torah. So we're talking about, in other words, you have the Sefer Torah itself is still completely intact. Or you're talking about the Mishnah there is talking about, let's say the person didn't touch the actual written part of the Sefer Torah. He just touched the margins on the edges. And we're saying that that's still Matama Seidai. Fine, because it's all one big thing. It's all one Sefer Torah. But again, here we're talking about the question, what if the letters of the Sefer Torah if a Torah are mostly erased and you have less than 85 of them, or what happens if the margins are cut off? Yeah, so you can't prove that from that Mishnah. Toshma. Another Braisa says, Hagyu Yoinin, the blank spaces, the Sifre Minin, and the Sforim of Minim. Ein matzilnos in mifnei adleika, you don't save them from fire on Shabbos. Elam isrofim b'mekayman hein v'azkere sehen, you let them be burnt where they are, them together with the names of Hashem. Now, what are sifrei minim? Rashi explains that the minim are goyish priests. So they can include Christians, they can include minim in general, as various people who have mistaken notions, deliberate mistaken notions about elikus. That I'm summarizes, like you have, for example, a min includes somebody who claims there's no Hashem at all, or that there's two gods or more, or that Hashem has a body, or like there's five different definitions. So it includes, it comfortably includes the Christians, it includes various other groups like that. So Rashi explains that we're talking about they wrote themselves Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim. They even wrote it in Ksav Ashuri. They even wrote it in Lashon Kodesh. So it looks exactly like one of our Sefer Torah. But the person who wrote it was a min. The person who wrote it is one of these people who's into Avodah Zarah or other heretical beliefs like that. Tosfos says that no, that's not what we're talking about over here, because the Gemara is going to say over here, you let them get burnt. You don't actually burn them yourself. Whereas you have a Gemara elsewhere that says that if you have a Sefer Torah that was written by a min, then you actually burn it. You don't just let it be burned. You yourself burn it. Now we're going to have a machlokas on that topic soon. You're going to have Reb Tauf, you're going to have the Chachamim, Reb Taufin and Reb Yosi. But Tosfos says the doichet to say that din is only according to Reb Taufin. So Tosfos learns that we're talking about over here. You find a Sefer Torah like that or something like that in the hands of a min. You don't know who wrote it. So you don't know who wrote it, whether the min himself wrote it, in which case you'd have to burn it, or whether somebody else wrote it and just the min got a hold of it. Anyway, so. So we're saying that you don't save them from a fire. You leave them to be burnt in their place. Hain Vazkarisei, and name them together with the names of Hashem that are in them. Now, my lap, Gilyonim, the Sefer Torah. Now, when we say in this Braise, Gilyonim, the Pashtus, we mean the blank spaces of a Sefer Torah. Because what else would it mean? No, because the Oisius aren't called Gilyonim. The Oisius is, yeah, Gilyonim, we said all this time, means a blank space. The answer is no. Look, Gilyonim is Sifrei Minin. Not necessarily. Maybe it means the blank spaces of the Sifrei Minin. So again, you have the Sefer Torah, or supposed Sefer Torah, that's in the possession of a Min. It itself has margins, because again, it was written like a regular Sefer Torah, and it has margins on the top and the bottom and the sides and so forth. So now you can talk about those Gilyonim. I says, what do you mean? Hash to Sifrei Minim Gufayu in Matzilin. What do you mean? If you're not even allowed to save the Sifrei Minim themselves, Gilyonin Miboya, what do you need to say about the blank spaces? Obviously, the blank spaces of their Svarim have even less Kedusha than the written part. The answer is Hachikama. You're right. What the Braisa means is the Sifrei Minim Harein Kegulyonin. You should know the Sifrei Minim have a similar din to Gilyonim. In other words, that actually we might be saying just that. The Gilyonim themselves do not have, or rather, Gilyonim over here could mean blank parchments that never were written on in the first place. Now, obviously, you have parchment, even if that parchment was made for the purpose of writing a Sefer Torah, if the Sefer Torah was never written on it, obviously it doesn't have the level of Kedusha to save it from a fire on Shabbos. So what we can be saying is, even the Sifrei Minim, even though they are in fact written, and they do have the words of the Torah on them, nevertheless they have the din-like parchment that was blank, that was never written on, namely that you don't save them. We can't necessarily prove from that about Gilyonim, where you have the blank spaces in an existing Sefer Torah, where again the Sefer Torah is worn out, and now you're wondering about the area where the writing, where the writing used to be, we said, never mind, there it has to have 85 letters or nothing. But we said, what about the originally blank spaces of that very same Sefer Torah, or what about if the blank spaces were cut off or whatever? So we don't really have a proof one way or the other. Because, again, you have to realize these minim that we're talking about over here, as the Gemara is going to say soon, are people that the Gemara is going to call them soon, makirin v'kofrin. They recognize Hashem, but they deliberately deny them. So they deliberately deny him. So again, it includes, for example, the early Christians. When you get down to it, most of the early Christians were Jews, but they believed in Yozel, and they believed in his various ideas or whatever. We're going to have a story about that in the Gemara soon. They had grown up as Jews among Jews. They knew the basic halachas of writing a Sefer Torah. And when they're writing Sefer Torah for themselves to use to be able to prove their various doctrines or whatever, then yeah, the pashtus, they would write them the same way as we write ours. They wouldn't follow necessarily all the dinim, but at least they'd follow the majority of them. Yeah. And again, according to Tosfos, we're talking about a Sefer Torah that you find in the hands of a min, and you don't know whether the min wrote it or not. The Ritva, by the way, says an expression about this. Okay, but still, why shouldn't you save it on the chance that maybe it was written by a Frum Yid? And he says, very simple, because the very fact that it's in the hands of a min itself makes it kind of, it's almost as if it was burned. It's already in a place of such gnai. You saving it from a fire on Shabbos is not going to help. It's not going to help with that. It's still going to be in the hands of the min. Therefore, you may as well just let it stay over there and let it get burned, because it's no worse off one way than the other, basically. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Gufa. Getting back to what we said before, we said Hagilyonim v'Sifrei Minim, we said the blank spaces and Sifrei Minim, which now we're saying means that the Sifrei Minim count like blank spaces, they count like blank parchments for this purpose. Ein Matzilinosin v'Pnei Bleika, you don't save them from a fire on Shabbos. Rabbi Yossi says something else. B'chol koder asaz kodesh shebehen v'gonzon. If it's on a weekday, then what you do is you cut out any place where it has Hashem's name in it, and you keep those, you keep them, v'gonzon, those you put in Sheamus, in case maybe after all that he did write it, l'shem kedushas Hashem or whatever, v'ashar sofa, and the rest of it you burn. So not like the Tanakamo, who says you just leave it alone, and eventually it may get burnt by itself. Rabbi Yossi is saying you actually have to burn these Sifrei Minim. However, what you do is first you cut out the names of Hashem in case they do have Kedusha. Yeah? Amr Reb Tarfon, on the other hand, Reb Tarfon says, no. Akapeach es bonai. may I cut off my children. We learned in the first paragraph, this was an expression that Reb Taufan used to use a lot whenever he came across a halacha that like he found strange, he couldn't understand it or whatever. He used this expression, akapeach es bana, like may I lose my children if such and such is true or not true. It was like a lashon shvura. Some of the Mephoshim explain that he would say it as a lashon of tsar, like I'm so bothered by the fact that Torah is being forgotten and we have machlokes in on these things. Like I feel like I almost feel like I'm losing my children. Anyway, whatever it is, that was his common expression. So actually, the Gemara says in Bava Metzia that yes, in the end, what a tzaddik says comes true. So actually, the Gemara mentions in Bava Metzia that in the end he had a grandson who didn't have any sons who survived him, but he had a daughter who eventually got married and had a son, and the son was off the derech, and then Rebbe met up with him and was able to get him to do tshuva. It is considered like Kilas Chacham, so yeah. That killas chacham afilat tanahi ba, yeah, that's. Okay, yeah, you're right. Now that you mention it, the Gemara mentions that with Yehuda ben Tamai, it's Erev ben Chacham. Different chachamim have different expressions that they use. Reb Taufan's signature expression, like for these kinds of things, is akapeach es bana. Anyway, so Reb Taufan says, shem yavoyu liyadi, if books of minim come into my hands. Forget about this idea of cutting. Forget about this idea of just letting them get burned or cutting out the names of Hashem. Shani esra faisim ve'esa azkaris rebbe, and I'll burn them together with the azkaris in them. Because first of all, you have the azkaris, the names of Hashem in them were not written. They made the chalal of had in mind. They were again according to Rashi, they were talking about books that were written by the actual minim. When they write the name Hashem, they're having in mind their avodah zarah, or they're having in mind their yoshka, whoever it is, you know. So they have no kedusha in them. Or the Rambam phrases it a little bit differently. Okay, they didn't have the kedusha of Hashem like this. We learned earlier in the Masechta that when you're writing the name Hashem in a sefer Torah, you're supposed to have in mind harini kosev Hashem kedushas Hashem. They're not doing that. And b'chlal, you don't want to leave any zecher for the minim. You don't want to leave any remembrance of the minim or anything that they do in the world. So therefore, Reb Taufan says, go ahead and burn the whole thing. Shafilu adam roidif achrav lahorga. You should know something, says Reb Taufan. Even if somebody is chasing after a person intending to kill him, the noho, he means himself also, even if somebody was chasing after me to kill me, but you know, the Gemara usually likes to mention these things in third person because the person doesn't want to say a kala about himself. The noho shrots lakishai, or even if a snake was after a person to bite him, nichnas leves of a dezara, a person would be better off. And Reb Taufan is saying, I would rather go into a house of a dezara, a temple of a dezara, to save myself, the ein nichnas levatein shel elu, rather than going into a house or church of one of these kinds of people. Shalola makir nekofrin, because the minim recognize Hashem, and they're actually deliberately they're deliberately going against Hashem. Again, these early Christians or whatever, they were Jews originally. They know about Elokus, Yodeas Rebonim Maskavnim Limerdbo, and then they deliberately go and Akofer and Hashem. Ba'alolo in Makir and Akofer, whereas the Goyim, at least the Avodah Zarah, okay, they don't really know what Elokus is. They don't know what they're doing. They're just, you know, they learned it from their ancestors, and they're just following in their ways. You actually have Gemara in other places. You have an Avodah Zarah where it says the idea that the goyim in particular outside Eretz Yisrael are just minigav esayim biyadeim. They're just worshiping Avodah Zarah because what they learned from their parents and their grandparents or whatever. It's not that they truly believe in it. So the minim are worse than the Ovd Avodah Zarah, and therefore it wouldn't be, and therefore even to save your life, you wouldn't be able to go into their places. Now the halacha is not so simple like that. The halacha is in Shulchan Aruch it talks about the question: are you allowed to go into a base Avodah Zarah or a base minim or whatever in order to save yourself? So in Shulchan Aruch it says actually you are allowed to go into a base Avodah Zarah, into a church or whatever in order to save your life. On the other hand, the Bach seems to disagree with that, and they discuss why. Is it because, I mean, on the face of it, even Reb Taufan over here is saying that you're allowed to go into a base of a disorder, just not a base I'm in. But anyway, the mainstream halacha is that if a person is allowed to go into a church or a base of a disorder or whatever in order to save their life, but not, let's say, for example, to go in there, you know, you're going to go in there in order to look at the artwork or whatever, there you don't have, there, or nowadays you have sometimes voting stations or inside churches or whatever, so there it's a lot more iffy to go in there for such purposes. Anyway, Continues Reb Tarfon, Va'alei Makosav Omer, about such people who know Hashem and deliberately deny Him, Jews who deliberately deny Elokus. On such people, the pasuk says, Va'achar Adelas Va'Mezuzah Samtich Reinich. You put your remembrance, which really means Hashem's remembrance, you put it behind the door and behind the mezuzah. In other words, Rashi says, you remember, you know what Elokus is, you haven't forgotten it, but you've deliberately like thrown Hashem behind the door because you don't care about him. So they're much more serious. So these kinds of things are much more serious than even the Ovid Avodah Zarah, and therefore their books should be burnt altogether and forget about this question their Paraphim says of just leaving them alone, or what Rabbi Yossi is saying of cutting out the names of Hashem, etc. Rabbi Shmuel, Kavah Chomer. Rabbi Shmuel says a different way of looking at it. You can make a Kavah Chomer. Uma lasas shalom ben ish leishtoi. Madach, in order to make peace between a husband and wife. Omra Torah shmish nichta b'kedusha yimocha alamoyim. The Torah says, Hashem says that my name that was written in holiness should be erased in the water. Namely, we know by the parasha Sota is erased into the water in order to make shalom between a husband and wife. Halalu, so these people, these minim, shematilim, kina ve'eva v'tachris ben Yisrael, avim shemayim, that they cause hatred and that they cause jealousy and hatred and competition between Yisrael, between the Jewish people and Hashem, alachas kama v'kama, how much more so that we should be destroying their svarim. In fact, Maharsha says the vote is here. We're talking specifically about the Christians and other people that have this kind of theology that says that Hashem rejected the Jewish people. We know it's a famous part of their theology, of their worldview, that Hashem rejected the Jewish people because of their averus and instead chose them as Hashem's new chosen people. So therefore, so Rabbi Shmuel is saying that they're, look at this, they're actually trying to cause hatred. They're trying to say that Hashem hates us and rejected us and whatever. So for sure, you should be destroying their swine. About such people, David says, Hashem, don't I hate the ones who hate you? The ones who stand up against you, I argue against them. I hate them with the utmost hatred. They became my enemies. So those are the kinds of people, as Alter Rebbe mentions in Perikom and Beis of Tanya, that those are the kinds of, usually we say, you have to have Avos Yisrael for every Yid, and even if he's doing Averus, you still have to have Avos Yisrael, you have Rachamim for him together with the fact that you hate the Averis he's doing, but then you have the Minim and whatnot that we're describing over here, and he refers to Ogamar over here, that then we say Tachlis Sinas Nesim. Now, you know, we're not necessarily talking about the kind, you know, nowadays you have Tinokas Trinishku, nowadays you have Jews that get involved with Christianity or with various other religions or cults or whatever because they don't know what Yiddish guide is all about. That's different. We had in Rambam, in Perek and Shlosha Perekim, it was yesterday, in Perek Echad it was a couple of weeks ago, about the difference between the original Koroyim, for example, and the ones who grew up in the ways of the Koroyim and don't know what genuine Yiddish guide is, where you have to bring them back to Chevle Avosas Ava. So yeah. Continues Rabbi Shmuel. Och shem she'en matzilin oisim mitnei adleika. Just like you don't save these sifrei minim from a fire. Kachen matzilin oisim lemin amapolis. The same way you don't save them even on weekdays from, let's say, a collapsed building. V'lemin amayim, or from a flood of water. V'lemin davar amabdon, or from anything else that would destroy them. You just leave them to be destroyed where they are. So according to Rashi, this is talking about on Shabbos. This is talking about even on weekdays. So just like we don't bend the rules of Shabbos to save them from a fire, the same way even on weekdays you don't save them from any other disaster that would be threatening them. You just leave them to be burned. According to Tosfos, we're talking about on Shabbos. And we're saying like this, with a fire, the Chachamim made these various gzeiros about what you're allowed and what you were not allowed to save because the Chachamim were concerned that you're going to panic, forget that it's Shabbos, and go and put out the fire. As opposed to, when it comes to a flood or any of these other things, there's not necessarily that much of a panic with a collapsed building or whatever. A collapsed building, let's say, it's not like it's going to get any worse. So therefore, you would think maybe you are allowed to save them. And no, therefore, the Braisa is telling us that not. Another point also, Rav Moshe makes a point in one of his chuvas that maybe the vote is that with a fire you have like the Sefer Torah is staying intact until the moment it catches on fire, and then it gets burnt pretty quickly and that's it, it's gone. As opposed to, let's say, with a mapolis, let's say with a building collapses on it, you could argue it's more of a gnai, that it's sitting there under the rubble still intact for a long time. Maybe there should be more of a hetcher to save it. No, we're saying because it's Sifrei Minim, you know. Okay. Boy minute Yosef Bachanan Merababo. Okay, so now Yosef Bachanan asked Rabohu a question as follows. We're talking about Sifrei Minim that we're saying you don't save them. Now, what about Hani Sifrei Debei Avidan? What about the Sforim of Tanakh that are in the house of Avidan? Matsun Oisim of Navloikoi, in Matsun, are you allowed to save them from a fire on Shabbos or not? Now, what is Bei Avidan? Rashi explains that the Minim wrote them for the Bei Avidan means a place where they have debates. It's a place where the Goyim would have debates with the Jews on questions of Torah and other such things. Like we have, you know, famously in the Middle Ages, you had many times where the Chachamim were forced to participate in such debates. Famously, for example, the Ramban had against, there was a Meshumad and a bunch of other priests against him. You have the Rabbi Yosef Albo, the Sefer Ikrim, and a bunch of other Chachamim in Spain were forced to participate in such a debate. So Bei Avidan is a place like that. The Minim wrote Sfarim to use in these debates. So are you allowed to save such Sfarim from the fire? Maybe we say they didn't write them strictly for purposes of Avodah Zarah. They're writing them for the purpose of the debates with Jews. So maybe they have a little more Kedusha in them. Rabbi Nachman explains a little bit differently. Bei Avidan is not necessarily where they have religious debates per se. It's more, it's a place in general where they have debates. They have people come there from different nations and they talk about different Divrei Chachma and they have debates on different Divrei Chachma. So like academies basically, and various Sforim are there because they have to have a library where people need to look up things that they're going to use in their debates. So the question is, what about those Sforim? So the Gemara says, "Ein v'lav v'rafya b'yadei." Rabbi Abahu answered yes, and then he answered no, and he wasn't really sure whether those have enough kedusha to be saved on Shabbos. So more about this Bei Avidan. The Gemara says, "Rav lo ozel Bei Avidan." Rav would not go to these Bei Avidan, to these debate places. V'choshken l'bein nitzrufi. Certainly, Rav would not go to a bein nitzrufi, which is a place of actual avodah zarah. Because, again, unless maybe it's a matter of pikuach nefesh, you can go there, like we said before, but not where it's not a matter of pikuach nefesh. So he wouldn't go. Shmuel, lebein nitzrufi, loy ozel. Shmuel would not go to the bein nitzrufi, but lebein avidan ozel. But he would go to the bein avidan, and he would participate in the debates and the discussions over there. Aside from what we just said, that Bei Avidan is a place of debates and Bei Nitzrufi is a place of Avodah Zarah, I saw in Oruch HaShalom, which is a kind of an updated version of the Oruch that was made about 100 years ago by a Yid named Kohut. So he has a long, interesting explanation over there along the lines of, he explains based on certain words in Persian that Avidan means like the new Persian religion that was starting to develop in Shmuel's times, and Nitzrufi is like the old Persian religion that from before his time. So he explains like Shmuel, because he wanted to keep up good relations with the new government of Persia, which believes in the new version of their religion, so he felt it necessary to go to the Bei Avidan, as opposed to Bei Nitzrufi, which is the old ones anyway, then therefore he didn't bother going there, as opposed to Rav didn't want to get involved with that at all. Omru loy l'Rava, so they asked Rava one time, also about Bei Avidan, my time alay osis l'Bei Avidan. One time the Goyim asked him, why don't you come to our local Bei Avidan and get involved in the debates over there? Omalahu, so he wants to evade them with an excuse. He says, Dikla planya ika ba'urcho, there's a certain tree on the way between here and there, bekoshili, and it gets in the way. The roots of it make a thing in the ground. They stick up above the ground and it's hard for me to pass by. Or Rashi says another explanation, it smells bad and therefore I can't bear to pass by it. So they say, okay, nekre. Okay, so we'll uproot the tree. It says, duchte koshile, the place where it was is still going to be hard for me, because either now there's going to be a hole in the ground and it's going to be hard for me to walk by, or the smell is still going to linger over there. Again, he's just using an excuse. Marshal says a deeper idea behind it is, he's telling them, so they're asking, why don't you come to the Bei Avidan? Rava held that it's also up yalacha to go there, because there's a certain element of Avodah Zarah involved. So he's saying to them, the tree, which represents the Torah, prevents me from going there. So they say to him, we'll uproot the tree. You know what? We're in the Bei Avidan. We'll go and we'll bring all kinds of proofs that the Torah is not true and that's to be replaced with our religion. And he tells them, come on, duchte kashli, the place where it was is very hard for me to understand how you think you could replace the Torah with some ideas of your own. So therefore I'm not going to deal with it. The Maharal says another vote on it. He says that the tree also represents that there was some there was some enemy of his over there. There was some person who hated him and would try to get him in trouble. So he says, I can't go because of that person. So they say, okay, Nechre, fine, we'll throw him out of the group and then you can come. He says, no, Duch de Koshali, what's going to happen? Then Adadabi, he's going to be all the madder at me that he got kicked out because of me, and then he's going to try causing me even more trouble. So I'd just rather avoid the whole situation in the first place. On the other hand, Marba Yosef says, I'm one of them, meaning I'm good friends with the guys who come to this Be'avidan. So I'm not afraid of them. I'm not afraid of going to the Be'avidan and getting involved in debates with them because I'm on good terms with them. But Zimna Chod also, one time Itaka went, Bo the Sakune, and then we're gonna get him in danger. So you see that you don't think that you know these guys and you can handle them. Yeah. Okay. Another at this point, actually, you have a line that's missing from our printed Gemara, but you can see it at the bottom in Chesronus Hashas. We mentioned, so we're talking about these Sifrei Minim. So now you have, we know when we come to the Minim, when we come to the early Christians, besides that they wrote Sfarim of Tanakh for themselves, because after all, they have our Tanakh as part of their Bible as well. They also wrote their own books, which they call the New Testament. The Greek name for those writings of theirs is something like Evangelion, which means something like the good news. That you have in English, you have words that come from it, like evangelism and whatever. Anyway, so the Gemara mentions over here that Reb Meir Korile Evangelion. Reb Meir, it says in Chesronus Hashas, used to call their writings Evangelion, the falsehood of the blank parchment. In other words, he took the word Evangelion, this Greek name of those writings, and turned it into a derogatory word in Lashon Kodesh, that it means that it's a falsehood, as if it was blank paper. Rabbi Yechanan called it Evangelion, and Rabbi Yechanan would call it Oven with an ayin, the sin of blank paper. Again, playing off the word Evangelion. So the censors, obviously, the censors later on, when the Gemara was printed in various Christian countries, the censors didn't want people writing such things, so they took it out, and it's printed in Chasar and Sashas. Okay. So the Gemara tells in this connection a story. Ima Sholem, that was her name, she was the wife of Rabbi Eliezer, and she was the sister of Ram Gamliel. This is Ram Gamliel of Yavne, after the Churban. There was a certain philosopha, which means Rashi translates as a min. The Aruch says that it just means chachme, that it means chachme or umus, or it means a stargazer or something. And Tosfos brings that it means somebody who loves wisdom. Tosfos mentions that there was a Yid who came from Greece and explained that the word philosophos comes from two Greek words that means somebody who loves wisdom. Anyway, so this philosopher, this min or this philosopher or whatever, the Shivavusei in his neighborhood, he was a judge, to have a shokel shmodelim kabel shukta. He gave out on himself a name, he gave out himself on a reputation that he doesn't take shoychad. Now, really, he would take it in secret, but he pretended as though he's this honest, incorruptible judge who will never accept shoychad. Yeah. Bo l'achuchide. Well, Ima Sholem and her brother, Rav Gamliel, wanted to make fun of this guy. They wanted to expose him for what he really is. So one reason might have been because there may have been Jews who are going to him, even though you're not allowed to go to a Goyish court when there's a Beis Din available. So it might have been that there were Jews going to him because he had this good reputation, and they wanted to demonstrate that that's wrong. Or we'll talk about at the end of the story another reason why they might have done this. Anyway, so she, Ima Sholem, one time brought this Goyish judge, this philosopher, a golden lamp. She brought him in secret the golden lamp. Doesn't necessarily mean she gave it to him, by the way. She's not, it may mean that she just showed him that I'm going to give this to you as sheikhah. Anyway, and then they came to a court case in front of him. So again, on the surface, what we're talking about is they just made up the court case for the purpose of exposing him. But again, so Dodas HaRishonim has an interesting explanation that what happened was after the Churban, and many Jews, of course, died and were killed during the War of the Churban and during the plague and were killed by the Biryonim, etc. The Romans at that point passed a law that says that anybody who died during that time, their property is nationalized unless you can bring proof that you're the heirs of the deceased. Otherwise it goes to the government. So now, therefore, they have to go to this Goyish judge in order to get their estate, because Reb Shimon Gamliel, Reb Shimon Gamliel did not survive the Churban. Now, usually we say he was one of the Asor HaRugei Malchus, although it's not so simple, because most of the other Asor HaRugei Malchus were about 60 years later. So, in fact, Doris HaRashonim says that Reb Shimon Gamliel was not, in fact, one of the Asor HaRugei Malchus. It was somebody else, he says, Reb Shimon Ben Askan, who was. But still, we don't find Reb Shimon Gamliel after the Churban, so either he died of plague or whatever during the siege of Yerushalayim, or maybe the Biryonim killed him, or we don't really know, but whatever it is, he was no longer alive. So now, okay. So his heirs now, so Imash Shalom and Ram Gamliel are his children, so they're coming now to get their Yerusha in order that the government doesn't take it over. This is how Doris sort of trying to explain the story. Okay, so again, she brings this judge in secret, a golden lamp, for Ozil to come in, and they came to him for a court case. Omrele, she says, I want to have a portion in my father's property. So this Goyish judge says, sure, go ahead, divide it up between yourselves, 50-50. Amalei, so Reb Gamliel says, what do you mean? Ksivlon, in our Torah it says, b'mkoim bra, brata loiteres, where there's a son, the daughter doesn't inherit. So therefore, I get the whole Yerusha, and Ima Shalom doesn't get anything. Amalehu, so the judge says to them, no. Min yoyma de golisin me'arachon, ever since you went into golos from your land, is natilus araisa de Moshe, the Torah of Moshe has been taken away, v'es yehiva sifra achriti, a different book has been given, and again, in the uncensored Gemara, it spells out that this is the book of the Oven Gilyon, has been given, meaning, in other words, again, the Christians' writings, that make the second part of their Bible. So that takes over, because that's the Christians had this whole idea that the Torah has been replaced by their laws. And in there it says that sons and daughters inherit equally. So therefore that overrides your Torah. Tough luck. So the next day, Reb Gamliel came to the same judge with a donkey from Luv. Now, we learned back at the beginning of the fifth parak, we learned about a creature called a Luvdekim, or Luvdekis, whatever, which is a very powerful, strong donkey that comes from Luv, from Mitzrayim, or Libya, or some area over there in North Africa, which is extremely strong and really good quality. So he brought him that as the Shoichan. And then they come back to continue the case. Amalahu, so now the judge says, okay, I found more information. Shvilis the Sefer de Sifra, I looked further down in the Sefer that I have, the book of Evan Gillian or whatever that I have, v'chosiv bay, and it says it as follows, Ano loyla mifchas min araisi de Moshe al-Sisi, I have not come to take away anything from the Torah of Moshe, v'loy l'oisfe al-araisi de Moshe al-Sisi, and I haven't come to add anything to the Torah of Moshe, or on the side over here, it says a different view, so Ella loisfe al-araisi I only came to add, because it was Yoshka and his followers came to add various new ideas of their own, but he supposedly didn't come to take anything away. And after all, in the Torah of Moshe, it says that when there's a son, the daughter doesn't inherit. So I have to find in Reb Gamliel's favor, after all. Really, of course, it was because of the Sheikhad that he got. Our Torah says that when there's a daughter, the sons don't inherit. So what it is, so he's saying like this. Originally he had said that ever since the Bismithish was destroyed, the Torah has been replaced by our writings. But now he's saying in our writings themselves it says, and you actually have, and in the Christian scriptures and in the New Testament, you have actually a line very similar to what the Gemara is saying over here, where they quote Yoshka as saying something like that. I haven't come to add anything to the Torah of Moshe or to take anything away from the Torah of Moshe. You have two different versions in our Gemara over here, whether he's saying that he's coming to add or whether that he's not coming to add, just like to clarify it or whatever. Whatever the case, the point is, so he actually says, so this philosopher, this judge says that after all, I found, you know what, you're right. The Torah of Moshe is not to be changed. Now, Taka, how does he reconcile it with what he said before? So a couple, the real reason is because of the Shoichad, of course, but what's the excuse he's using that after all, before he said that the Torah is supposed to be replaced? So there's a couple of different interesting explanations. One of them is he might have reinterpreted the first one to say that when we say a daughter inherits, we mean the person who passed away had two sons, and one of the sons died, then the halacha is actually that his daughter inherits together with her uncle. So he might have reinterpreted it that way, or he might have just said, al derech, like you have a tfois loshen achron. You have an ashtar, that when you have two things in a shtar that contradict each other, in general you go according to the second loshen, according to the loshen later on in the shtar. Because like he changed his mind. So like here he might have used the same excuse. Al-Habdo, the Muslims have something similar with their scriptures, where if they have a contradiction between earlier parts and later parts, then they also say that they also say that the later one takes precedence. La'avdil in the Gemara, sometimes we say the Lishna Achrina is the one that we follow the halacha. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Okay. Omrele, so Ima Sholem says to the judge, wait a minute. Nahur Nahurach Kishraga. Let your light shine like a lamp. Like she's trying to hint to him, wait a minute, what about that lamp that I offered you as Sheikhan? Omrele Ram Gamliel. So Ram Gamliel answers, nah, Asra Chamro, Vatash Lashraga. The donkey came and kicked over the lamp. So in other words, now everybody realizes what this guy really is, that he's really taking Sheikhad, and that he's honest, that he made himself out to be. This was all in front of him, yeah. So this way, so now that's it. So now his reputation, so now this reputation that he made for himself, that he's Nick Sheikhad, has been completely destroyed. And again, so again, according to Dodas or to Shonim, they were in this for a practical reason, because they needed to actually get their father's inheritance so it doesn't get nationalized, so it doesn't get taken over by the Romans. And according to everybody else, it may have been like this also, they show him up for what he really is, and like this also, no Jews in particular will ever go to him again for justice. No, if he's the local, fine, but like this, maybe they can get him fired. If they show that he takes Sheikha, then they can get him fired, and then, yeah. But the point would be, in other words, like this, according to that way of looking at it, like this, you might have had Jews who are not just, maybe not just they don't have a choice but to go to him, but like they'd say, L'chatchila, we might as well go to him. Why should we go to the Rabbanim? We might as well go to him. He's honest. Now, when we see he's not honest, then they're not going to do that. But yeah. The Maharal says a vort on it, by the way. We know that Hashoichad Ya'aba Eine Chachamim, that bribery blinds the eyes of the wise. So that's the connection with the lamp. That's why she dafka used a lamp as her Sheikhad to represent that idea. Like Sheikhad takes away your ability to see. Meanwhile, Ram Gamliel used a donkey because a donkey represents Chumrius, like the materiality of Olam Hazeh, that this guy is fartifed in, and therefore, therefore he's taking Sheikhad, even though as a judge he shouldn't. So like Rav Gamliel says, like, you know, she's saying at the end of it there, you know, your light should shine, you know, realize what the true judgment is. And Rav Gamliel says, you know what, his chumrius is kicking away any traces of light that he could possibly have because he's too much into Olam Hazeh and he's too much into Olam Hazeh in that he's willing to accept Sheikhad. So no, because the Gemara actually says Aila, like she brought to him. Doesn't necessarily mean they gave them to him. They weren't going to waste good money on him. Because just the fact that they're showing, if you decide in my favor, then I'll give this to you. Yeah, they tell a story. They tell a cute story in that connection about a rav who unfortunately used to take bribes. Also, even though it's of course also al pi halacha, and the Torah says ki asherchad ya'aver ein chachamim. This rav, when he was dying, whatever, when he started getting older, became deaf. So they asked him what happened. Isn't it supposed to blind him rather than make him deaf? And he says, because they never actually gave me the sheikhah. They jingled the coins to me. Like I was able to enjoy the sound of the coins they're going to give me, but they never actually gave it to me. So I never enjoyed it with my eyes, only with my ears. So here maybe it's similar also. Like they only offered it to him. They didn't actually give it to him. Okay. We said in the Mishnah with name Ma Ein Kod in Chola, we said, why are you not allowed to read Ksuvim? Why are you not allowed to read Ksuvim? We said, Mipnei Bitul Beis HaMedrash, because it keeps people away from the Beis HaMedrash when the Chacham, when the local Rav is supposed to be daushening in Halachas for the Balabatim who can't learn Torah during the week. So, Amar Rav, Lo Shanu El Bizman Beis HaMedrash. When are we saying you're not allowed to read Ksuvim on Shabbos is only during that time when they're supposed to be having the Beis HaMedrash. Meaning, in other words, before the meal. They used to darshan on halacha before the Shabbos meal in the morning. So that would be the time when you're not allowed to read Ksuvim. Avo shaloi bizman beis hamedrash, but outside of that time, after the meal, then they wouldn't darshan over there because people get drunk during the meal. And as it is, people are not going to listen clearly to the drasha. And the Rav himself actually is not allowed to paskin halachas in his drasha after he's drunk a levius wine. So Shabbos afternoon, they wouldn't be darshaning in halachas. So therefore, go ahead and read Ksuvim then. Shmuel says that no, even when the Beis Medrash is not going on, you're not allowed to read Ksuvim all Shabbos. So the Gemara says, "Any, is that so?" Nahauda, we know, was the city where Shmuel was the Rav and the Rosh Hashiva. In Nahauda, they used to read a section of Ksuvim as the Haftarah on Shabbos afternoon. And they used to have, in other words, they lay in the Torah Shabbos afternoon, like we do nowadays, and they had a minute to read a portion of Ksuvim as a Torah for it. We don't do that. By Mincha of Shabbos, we don't read any Haftarah. But so Tosfos actually mentions earlier in the Masechta that yes, there used to be such a minig. The Gaonim mentioned that it still existed in a few places in their times. But basically, what happened was that there was a Gzeira against it at one point, and therefore they stopped doing it. And therefore, once they stopped, then they didn't start again in most places. So that's why we don't really have it nowadays. But there was such a thing of reading a portion of Ksuvim on Shabbos afternoon. They say actually there's an interesting quote from Reuven Margolius and some others in Minig Ashkenaz. They have a Minig after Mincha of Shabbos. They say Kapitlach Kufyud Aleph and Kufyud Beis of Tilim. And during the winter they also say the Shir Amalasin. That might be a leftover vestige of this Minig to read Ksuvim Shabbos afternoon because Tilim is part of Ksuvim. Anyway, so we see that in Nahadah they would read Ksuvim on Shabbos afternoon. So how could Shmuel be saying that the whole Shabbos you're not allowed to be reading Ksuvim? The answer is Ela iitma hochi itma. No, rather, if this discussion between Rab and Shmuel was said, then it was said as follows. Amar Rab, lo shanu el b'mkoyim beis medrash. Rab is saying, when are we saying that you're not allowed to read Ksuvim? Is when there's a beis medrash in town where the chacham is going to be giving this drasha and halachas that people need to know. Avol shaloi b'mkoyim beis medrash, but if it's a place that doesn't have that caliber of beis medrash, good, and then you're allowed to read Ksuvim in such a place. Or Shmuel, Amar Shmuel says, no, ben b'mkoyim beis medrash, ben shaloi b'mkoyim beis medrash. Whether it's a place where there is a Beis Medrash or not, whether there's a place where there is a Beis Medrash or not, Bisman Beis Medrash and Kodin, Shalom Bisman Beis Medrash Kodin. You still can't read it during the time when there should be a Beis Medrash. So even if there's no Beis Medrash in town, nevertheless, you could still have, let's say, in the next town over there might be, and people could walk there if it's within the Tchum, or they can make an Erev Tchum or whatever. So even in a town where there's no Beis Medrash itself, you don't want people to be reading Ksuvim, because better they should be walking over to the nearby town where there is a Beis Medrash and where they can hear the drasha, or maybe arrange before Shabbos to stay there if it's further away, whatever it is, as opposed to Shalom Bisman Beis Medrash when it's a time of day when they're not davening, namely in the afternoon, Kodin, then you're allowed to read Ksuvim. And as the Shmuel Tamei, in that case, Shmuel is going according to his own Shita, the Minahardah, Paski Sidrut, Ksuvim, the Minchas of Shabbos, because in Nahardah they used to do that. They used to lay in a section of Ksuvim in public on Shabbos afternoon. So that's one way of understanding the machlokes. Rav Ashi Amar La'olam Kedam Moran Meikra. Rav Ashi says you don't need that. You could actually explain the machlokes of Rav and Shmuel the way we did originally. That it's the time that Shmuel is saying you can't read it, even not Bisman Beis Medrash. What about what they did in Nahadah? Ushmuel Kedam Nechemya. Shmuel, when he says you're not allowed to, is saying that according to Rav Nechemya's Shita. That there's a different reason, which we're going to discuss in a second, why you can't read Ksuvim on Shabbos. So when it came to practical halacha, and it came to paskening practical halacha for the people of his city of Nahadah, then Shmuel went like the Chachamim, that the only reason is Mifnei Bittul Beis HaMedrash, and therefore he allowed them to do it Shabbos afternoon. But when he says before not to do it, even during the day, he's saying that according to the Nechemiah's opinion. That Rav Nechemya has a different reason why not to read Ksuvim. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Afal pi she'omru Kisvei HaKodesh en Kodin ben, even though we're saying that you're not allowed to read Kisvei HaKodesh, meaning Ksuvim, on Shabbos, Avol Shonin ben, but you are allowed to learn in them, meaning the Midrashim on them. For example, Rashi says the Midrashim on Shir HaShirim and Kehelas. Vidoshin behen, you're allowed to darshin them, again, like to learn the midrashim on them, or to learn how to learn dinim that we learn from them, or whatever. Nitzrech l'pasuk, and also if the rav during his drasha needs to see a pasuk from ksuvim, maybe viroya, but he can bring a book of ksuvim and look up the pasuk. And then it's not like the svarim of ksuvim are mukta, in other words, you're just not supposed to sit down and read them. But so far, in other words, according to the Tanakh Kama, the whole reason is, we said, because Bittul Beis HaMedrash, because if you start reading Ksuvim, and Ksuvim are very interesting, then you're gonna get into that, and you're gonna miss the drosha that the Rav is giving on practical Hilchos Issa V'Heder. But Amar Rav Nechemya says a different reason. Mifnei Ma Omru Kisvei HaKodesh Ein Koren Behen. Why did the Chachamim say that you're not allowed to read Kisvei HaKodesh on Shabbos? Kadesh Yomru, in order that people should make a Kavach Yomru for themselves. People should say, the Kisvei HaKodesh Ein Koden, if you're not even allowed to read Kisvei HaKodesh, the Choshek and Vishtore Hedyotis, how much more so you're not allowed to read common people's documents, which means, for example, let's say Rashi says, documents that have, for example, business calculations or invoices or whatever on them, or letters that people write in order to find out things for their business or whatever. So you're not allowed to read those on Shabbos. Actually, Tosfos gets into the question over here. What about reading letters on Shabbos? Are you allowed to? You received a letter. So let's say you opened it before Shabbos. Are you allowed to read it on Shabbos? So Tosfos discusses, maybe it depends. On the one hand, you can say that you what are shtore hedyotis that you're not allowed to read over here is things that, for example, where you have debts or other business things mentioned in them. But a letter you might have, let's say, a letter might be the kind of thing you don't know. There might be something of pikuach nefesh or some great need in there, and therefore you're allowed to read it. And even if you already read it before Shabbos and you know that there isn't, still you might be allowed to reread it, basically. And Shulchan Aruch talks about a number of different details. In that, we're going to talk about that more in more detail in the next to last perek of our Masechta. So in about a month, Bez Hashem, we'll deal with this whole matter of Shtore Hedyotis. But in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions various things. There's different dinim about reading letters. Maybe you're allowed to because you get Hanah from reading them. Are you allowed to read books? Are you allowed to read books on Shabbos that are not books of Torah? Maybe yes, maybe not. It depends on the kind of books, whatever. Okay. So according to the first version we had in the Gemara, according to the first understanding, the machlokas that we had in the Gemara, then Rav would be saying that you're not you're allowed to read them all Shabbos if you're in a place where there's no Bris Medrash, and Shmuel would be saying that not even that you still have to not read them during the time when the Bris Medrash is going on. And then according to Rav Ashi's understanding, the Machlokas was saying that Shmuel would agree you're allowed to read them outside of the time of the Bris Medrash. He's just saying Rav Nechemia is telling us that you're not allowed to read them on Shabbos at all because we don't want people to read Shtore Hedyotis, and therefore that applies all Shabbos. That's the point. In other words, we make a Kavachomer. If a person is going to realize, if I can't even read Ksuvim, for sure I can't read Shtore Hedyotis. Okay. Mishnah says, Matzilin tikka sefer im sefer. You're allowed on Shabbos. Now we're talking about in the previous Mishnah, saving the Sfarim on Shabbos. You're allowed to save the case of the Sefer Torah together with the Sefer Torah itself. The tikka tefillin im tefillin. You're allowed to save the case of the tefillin together with the tefillin. The alpha pishi yesh b'seichan mois. Even if there's money inside the case as well. Now, by the way, you're not allowed, if the case is reserved for tefillin, you're not allowed to put money in it. But here we're talking about where you didn't have it reserved exclusively for that, or where you had the money in there first, and then you decided to, please turn that off until we're done. Anyway. And continues the Mishnah to what place are you allowed to carry such things in order to save them? You're allowed to save them to a mavui that's not completely open, meaning we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow what it means, but a mavui she'enim afulish usually means a mavui that's closed in on three sides and it's open to Rosh Hashanah on the fourth side, and you have to put a lechi and Torah over there. Ben Beseira Oma, after mafulish, Ben Beseira says you're even allowed to save it to a mavui mafulish, even to one that's open on both sides. But again, we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow the details of that. Okay. So the Gemara is going to start off with a discussion about skinning the Korban Pesach on Shabbos, which that discussion is going to lead into our Mishnah. Tana Rabbanan, our Baal also Shechalias for Shabbos, if the 14th of Nisan comes out on Shabbos, Mafshitin is a Pesach Adachoze, you're allowed, now, so like this, you have the Korban Pesach is being brought on Shabbos, of course we know that. We know that part of bringing the Korban Pesach is you have to bring the Emurim, you have to bring the fat and offer it on the Mizbeach and various other internal organs and offer them on the Mizbeach. So obviously you have to strip off the skin from the animal in order to get to those. But usually you have, so on a weekday you would strip the skin off completely from head to toe, and or from toe to neck rather, because you hang up the animal by its back legs and then strip downwards. The question is, what about on Shabbos? So Divrei Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yechon ben Breker, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yechon ben Breker is saying you're only allowed to strip it down to the chest, meaning what you do is you What you do is you start from the legs, you strip down until you expose the area of the body where the emurim are, you cut it open, you take those out, you leave the rest of the skin attached until after Shabbos. The chum and mafshitin is cooler, the chum say you strip off all the skin. So, now why is that? The Shlema Lord of Shmuel B'nei Rabbi Yechonon Breka, he would say the reason why you can't do any further, you've done what you needed to for Hashem, you've done the part to take out the Emurim, you shouldn't have to do anything else. El the Rabbanon my timer, but why would the Rabbanon say you're allowed to take off the whole skin? Amar Rav Babachona, Amar Rabbi Yechonon, Amar Kro, Koil Po'al Hashem L'matneu. The Pasuk says everything Hashem did, he did for his sake, meaning you have to do things in a way that gives honor to the Korbanos. And the Gemara says, "V'hocha ma'ilam aneurika." So, what is there? How is there covered for the korban by taking off all the skin? Can you please wait another 10 minutes before you turn that on? I can. Yeah. Okay. As it is, I start at 6:30. As it is, I start at 6:30. Give me a break, please. We're almost done. Relax. Relax, please. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't. Okay. Can guys, please, let's talk about it afterwards. Okay. So what lamanehu is there in stripping off all the skin once you took out the emurim? Rabbi Yosef says this way, this meat doesn't spoil. You need to be able to roast the meat and eat it that night as a korban pesach. Like this, if the skin is left on it, it's going to get hotter and it's going to spoil. Rava says the reason is you don't just want to have kodshe shemaim. You don't just want to have the kodshim sitting over there like a nevela, like it's just abandoned, like you have half the skin is on and half the skin is off. The Gemara says, my benayu, what's the practical difference between those two explanations? What if the korban pesach, that's half skin, is left on a golden table? So it's not a matter, there's no problem of that it looks like a nevela. You wouldn't leave a nevela on a golden table, but on the other hand, you have the problem that the meat may spoil. Inami yoima de istina, or you may have the other way around. What if it's a cool day, you have a north wind blowing, so then the meat is much less likely to spoil, but on the other hand, you have the problem that it looks like a nevela. So those are two nafkamins. Okay. So that's why the Chachamim say you can take off the whole skin. What about Rabbi Shmuel ben Yosef Rabbi Yechonon Breka, hi, Paul Hashem l'maneu mayo? Like, what would he say? What about the fact that you have to do it in a way that brings honor to Hashem and to the korban? The answer is he would say shelo yotzei emurim kodem afshatazar. He says all that means is you do have to strip off some of the skin. You can't take out the emurim without removing the skin. You can't just cut through the skin and the flesh and take out the emurim. You have to strip off the skin first. My timer. Now why not? Amar abhuna breder of nas and mishum nimin. Because the problem is that then you have pieces of hair or wool or whatever that stick to the emurim as you take them out, and then it's not the covered dick to offer the emurim like that with hair or wool or whatever stuck to them. So he agrees, you have to take off the skin in order to avoid that. That's the call, Paul Hashem L'maneu. That's doing it in, that's acting in honor of Hashem that way. But not that you could actually strip off more of the skin than you need to take off the emurim. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with how this relates to our Mishnah, as far as moving on Shabbos, as far as carrying out from a fire the Sefer Torah together with its case. That's something else. That's if he's stripping off the skin all in one piece. That you're not even allowed to do on Yom Tov. That you know, he was not talking about taking it all off in one piece. But yeah, okay. We learned it first. It comes up in the Masechta Beitza, but it comes up in other places. I think it came up in Bechoros. I don't remember. Okay.